Hello, welcome to your meditation practice as part of the Open Heart Project. My name is Susan Piver. I'm very happy to sit with you in meditation. And we're going to sit for 10 minutes. We're going to start soon. So please take your seat and get settled, whether you're on a cushion on the floor or in a chair. Or sometimes people use kneeling benches, all of those, sitting, kneeling, sitting on a couch. Equal spiritual value. So please choose a place to sit and a way to sit that works for your body and that enables you to sit up straight to the best of your ability. And before we get started, I want to share a few thoughts on something that is fascinating to myself. Perhaps it will be of interest to you too. I hope so. That's why I'm talking about it. And it is what is called the middle way. Maybe you've heard Buddhism referred to as the middle way. What is it in the middle of? Who said that? What does that mean? So interestingly, although the middle way maybe sounds like, oh, some nice philosophical point of view, it's so much more profound than an intellectual exercise to describe this path. And this practice that we're fixing to do as belonging to the middle way. I think about it all the time. And I've been thinking about it for like 30 years. But I'm not going to, break it down for you in real time. So when the historic Buddha first became enlightened and he rejoined his community and they said, "You seem different. What happened?" One of the first teachings he gave, in addition to the Four Noble Truths, is that our path, he was talking to his people, is the middle way. And it is neither of the two extremes that we usually find in spiritual schools of thought. So the first school of thought is called eternalism. And it says, if you find the set of rules that works for you, and a belief system that sounds right to you, and there is an external deity that has established parameters for a good life, for good behavior, and you follow those rules within those parameters, and eventually you could end up somewhere really, really, really awesome forever, eternally, and everyone you love will be there. And your reward will come later, and bad behavior will be punished eventually. Now, if you belong to such a school of thought, fantastic. I am in no way trying to diss that or criticize that, nor was, as far as I can tell, the Buddha. He was just saying, that's not what we do. We don't take a theistic approach. Theism means there's an external deity. And in Buddhism, there is no external deity. At the same time, you see all these images back here and they look kind of deified. But it's a different way of looking at divine energy, which I'm happy to talk about if anyone's interested. But it's not like there's a being who has started the world, established the rules, heaven, hell, please try to go here. Interestingly, again, in Buddhist thought, the Tibetan Buddhist thought, in any case, there are ideas about heavens, not just one, but heavens and hells, but that is outside the scope of this conversation. And it is a somewhat different context than the theistic view. So again, no problem. All Buddha said was, we don't do that. Now the other extreme, on the opposite end of the spectrum from everything you do has meaning, and it's either for you or against you, positive column or negative column, and the result will come later. The other extreme is sometimes called nihilism or nihilism. I go with nihilism. Which is some blanket term for there is no one out there. There is no belief system beyond what you yourself choose to believe, and there's no one keeping score, and meaning is only ever subjective. So what you think is meaningful is meaningful. What you do not think is meaningful is meaningless. You're the arbiter. And when you die, that's it. So the meaning is personally sourced and limited to your first breath and your last exhale. Again, if that is your way of thought, the only things that matter are things that I have chosen to believe. No problem. However, the historic Buddha said, we also don't do that. So it's not everything is meaningful and you get judged, and nothing is meaningful, just do your best. It's the middle way. Now, interestingly, the middle way is not the midpoint between these two extremes. Nor does the middle way say, we're not this and we're not this. It doesn't say that. It also doesn't say we're not neither, nor are we both. Not this, not this, not this, not this, not both, not neither. Thanks, Buddhism. Very helpful, confounding. And if you stop and try to parse that for a moment, which perhaps you're doing right now, not this, not this, not both, not neither. Well, what's left? Only now. Only something experiential, I guess, is a word for it. And nothing to do with beliefs. These are my interpretations, so you must take them with a giant boulder of salt. But great masters have written about the middle way. And I can make a few suggestions in the email that accompanies this video, if that's of interest. But I, not saying anything about you, I cannot grasp the true meaning of the middle way with my mind. I can only try in the moments that I encounter in my life to notice when I am heading towards an eternalistic stance. Like I'm going to, you know, someone's watching and they're going to really appreciate how hard I'm trying, and I'll get something good later. I hope that's true. But to pull back from that way of thought, and to also pull back from the way of thought that says, you know what? Whatever you think is the truth. So this way says there's vast mystery that we can never really know until we're dead. And this way says there is no mystery. What you see is what you get. Now, meditation teachers sometimes default into eternalism or nihilism. So for very broad and poorly researched examples, I would say that on the eternalist side, or eternalistic meditation, there are meditations that say, do this to find bliss. Do this practice and you can always be equanimous forever and ever. This meditation practice will help you manifest what you long for. I hope it does, but so far I have not seen that to be true. If you meditate consistently, you can find lasting peace. Maybe that's true. I have not found that to be so. On the nihilistic side, meditation instruction often begins with something like this. There's real science behind that. Oh, we've proven it through, I don't know what, molecules and microscopes. We have shown that meditation is awesome. So if you do it, you don't have to worry about any of these, you know, woo-woo thoughts, because we've proven it. And that's why we're doing it, because it's been shown to reduce stress and help you sleep better and all those things. Those are obviously really good things. But the practice that we are doing is the middle way practice. Not this, not this, not trying to merge with the mysterious, and certainly not denying the mystery of being human. It's in the middle. Now, you're going to have to tell me what that means for you. But please keep in mind that we're just doing this very simple technique. We're not trying to get anywhere, and we're not trying to hold on to proof that this is good. So what's left? Something in the middle. And the last thing I'll say before we practice is great teachers, masters, like realized capital T teachers, have said, and I'm sure there's others who have said the opposite, but what I have heard is, if you got to have to choose between those two, choose this one. At least eternalists have some sense of a connection to the phenomenal world and hope and an emphasis on love and a willingness to see beyond what can be touched and proven. Those who default to this side are in worse shape, according to these teachers, because it dries up the whole world to what can be proven, to what I think, which is, believe me, a very small piece of what is possible to believe, and discounts everything else but me. That's not good. This one at least opens to something bigger than me. This one confines all of reality to me. Sorry, reality. So, I hope that's interesting. I hope that provokes your own thought. That's the whole idea. And in the meantime, let's forget about all of that and just sit. Our practice begins with the way you take your seat. And the basic idea is to just sit up straight. I sometimes find that I'm leaning forward, like I'm trying to get somewhere. And other times I sort of say, I'm leaning back, I'm a little sleepy. Okay, well, nothing wrong with those things. But for our purposes, we just want to sit up straight, not trying to get anywhere, not trying to escape anything, right here. Another kind of middle way. The hands rest on the legs, palms down. This is actually a mudra. It's called resting the mind mudra. So there's some sense that placing our hands like this encourages the mind to rest, which is really good. Let the belly soften. Let the shoulders relax. The chin is tucked a little bit, so the back of the neck is long and the mouth is closed, but the lips and teeth can be slightly parted. And please enjoy not having to say anything. It's a luxurious and wonderful to just be silent. Breath is natural in and out through the nose, unless you have a cold or allergies. Otherwise, just breathing. You already know how to do that, so just keep doing that, please. The eyes remain open, and the gaze is cast down to a comfortable spot in front. And let there be a sense that wherever your gaze lands, what you see is coming forward a little bit to meet your gaze, so you don't have to reach out for it. But you're also just sitting there looking down. and let the brow relax. Let your attention come to rest on the breath, which means to feel the breath rather than observe the breath. Observing seems to happen here, even though I have no idea where it actually lives, but feeling happens throughout. So just feel the body breathe. There's some sort of expansion with the inhale and some sort of letting go on the exhale. Stay with the feeling of the body breathing in and out and again. Let your mind be as it is. There's no effort to stop thinking or change thinking or think nice things. Whatever's going on up there, no problem. A lot of thoughts, very few thoughts, no preference. It's just activity. But our primary attention is on the breath, the rhythm of the breath. And since no matter how hard you try, you cannot breathe in the past, and you cannot breathe in the future, when we're feeling the body breathe, we're feeling our way into the present moment. And then it's gone. And then it happens again. It's instructive. Now, if you notice that you lose track of your breath completely, you become absorbed in thought, aka you spaced out. So useful to notice that, because you're working with your mind. You're seeing your mind. So when you notice that you're not meditating anymore, you could say to yourself silently, thinking. Let go, whatever the thoughts are about. Come back to this breath and begin again. So we'll sit together in silence until you hear the bell. Thank you so much for your practice. Thank you for practicing with me. Thank you for practicing together. And just to mention, if you're interested in exploring this view of meditation as part of the middle way more closely, starting in September, I'm going to be teaching a meditation teacher training, 11 weeks. And whether you go on to teach or not, it will give you a deep and contemplative look at the middle way and how our practice relates to it. Okay, thank you again.